This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 225, recorded on July 30th, 2015.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff. The final liftoff of Atlantis.
Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. And, of course, we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions you'd like to get those in, you can contact the show. Send me an email, Jim at TheAverageGuy.tv. And more of you are doing that, so I appreciate that. Always good to hear from you. If you find me, you can find me on Twitter as well, at Jay Collison. Or now you can call in those questions. I'm going to leave that line up a little bit longer. I keep getting calls. 402-478-8450. We'll play those voicemails right here on the show. And theaverageguy.tv, of course, is powered by Maple Grove Partners Web Hosting. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people you know and you trust, such as Christian. You know Christian. And for that, for more information, visit Maple Grove Partners. All one word, maplegrovepartners.com. Christian's got some plans. Start at $10. He's great at WordPress, so if you're starting to think of a blog, both Mike and I use him, and he's got some spaces on his servers, and so if you're thinking about doing that, head over to Maple Grove Partners tonight. If we want to, we also want to thank Roger over at WLMN Radio, and of course, you can find them WLMNRadio.com for streaming us daily. I think it's 9 a.m., 10 a.m., something like that, out of Grafton, West Virginia, old school radio there. Roger, thanks for doing that. And Home Gadget Geeks, of course, is a part of the Geeks Network. You can find the links to this show and many other great podcasts out at the geeksnetwork.com. Mike, I heard you. I was listening to OMN, Open Mic Night, and I heard you talk about the Geeks Network. So you
I
got
did.
That.
I realized the week before I had forgotten to mention it, so I finally got it in my script, you know, and I put it up there so I don't forget each week. But yeah, part of the Geeks Network. I love it. Finally there.
Are you tracking anything coming from, have you looked at your Google Analytics to see? Because I'm noticing, like, I get 60 or 70 like reference hits from the Geeks Network site, which I never thought those
really
aggregate site worked. You know, you're kind of like, eh, nobody ever goes to those things. You know, nobody ever uses them. But I get.
I should look. I haven't yet. Look. But I should
look.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of interesting, especially with the Apple focus that you have. I didn't introduce you, but Mike, welcome back. You took a week off, right?
Yeah, I took a nice little vacation down to the lake. I actually was driving down there while you guys were having the show. I was trying to stream it, but it wasn't going too well. I have Sprint, which is just awful. If I had Verizon, I'm sure I would have been able to do it. But driving through the boondocks in Missouri didn't work too well trying to stream the show.
No, good. Welcome back. We had a really interesting show on Bitcoin last week, which was just really lit the chat room up. It was one of those kinds of shows. Not a lot of people talking about Bitcoin right now, but very, very interesting. You know, we've got this Bitcoin ATM down at Jones Brothers down in Stenson Park that I had no idea. You can follow it on Twitter. I tweeted it. It tweeted me back. Obviously, it's not that, but somebody's following that Twitter account, right? And I thought, holy cow, we have a tweeting Bitcoin ATM. The world is a whole different place, right? And so if you didn't catch that, it's actually 223. And I know I said this is 225. I did a kind of a special message at the end of 223 that we're going to make 224. That's going to enter into the – so for those of you who are listening live, that's going to be this weekend's show. And then I'll be a week ahead. I got some vacation coming up, and I'll need some spacing in there. So 224, special conversation I had with you guys that you'll want to pick up this weekend. And then, of course, this one will go live next weekend, and we'll be one ahead. So, Mike, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, glad to be here.
All right, we want to introduce our guest, and I want to introduce Alex Gates. I've interviewed Alex a couple times, I think. Alex, we write two times at Infotech, is that right?
HDC and Infotech.
Yeah. HDC and Infotech, and of course, HDC Heartland Developer Conference. Infotech is another tech conference here in Omaha. Interviewed him both times, and at the end of this one, I said, and the interview we did last week was also Infotech person. You got you guys back to back, but what you were doing was so interesting. I said, man, I got to get you on the show. And so welcome. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Let's do a little bit intro. It's always best if you just talk about yourself from that. So give us a little bit who you are, your background, where you're from, you know, those kinds of things so we can get to know you.
Sure. I'm an Iowa boy, born and raised. And I graduated from a small town in northwest Iowa in 2000, and then I went out to the University of Northern Iowa, where I started with a management information systems degree. The math got a little tough, and you know, I started taking all sorts of different weird classes that didn't really go toward a degree, and ended up just graduating with a liberal arts degree, which, you know, at the time I thought, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I was always into computers when I was growing up, and in fact, I think the liberal arts degree has been one of the most beneficial things I could have done. But like I said, I was born in 1982. 3 years later, my dad bought a Commodore 64, and so as early as I can remember, I was always using a computer. And that was really, you know, I kind of came of age right at the time that the internet was really taking off, you know, dialing in at 9600 baud, and then we got the 14.4 and 28.8, you know, 33.6. I was kind of riding that all the way, and really into... you know, I was really into the chat rooms and things like that, you know, early on. And then I got to thinking, you know, I'd really like to, you know, try to build my own website. And I think that really kind of came about because in the very early days of some of these chats, you know, like back in the Netscape days, you know, people were able to just sort of interject HTML in these chat rooms and change background colors and change everybody's font colors and that kind of stuff. So it was really, that was my taste into HTML. And yeah, in 1996, I launched my first website on GeoCities, and I continue to do that. And,
good old GeoCities, huh?
Yeah, South Beach was where I lived. It was great.
Yeah, no, that was my first too. My first introduction to the web was on GeoCities, and
same here.
We created a GeoCities community that years later we tried to get rid of. I mean, it was still out there. It was still working, and we created it for a company, and they didn't want it anymore. But we couldn't find a way to get rid of it, so it stayed around. I think they eventually shut things down and deleted a lot of the stuff. But yeah, that's good. I think a lot of the listeners here today that are out there, even some in the chat room, I bet, got their start on GeoCities for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I kept that up. I mean, I did web design. I did a lot of Flash development. When I was a senior in high school, this was in 1999, I was an exchange student in Denmark. And they do some really interesting things there where they sort of get kids in the right career path when they're, you know, early on. So I was 17. I was in a class of, you know, 16-year-olds. And so for 2 weeks, we would be in regular school, and the next 2 weeks, we were at a technical college. And that's where I really got into Photoshop. I got into doing some Flash, ActionScript, and those kinds of things. So I kept it up. And so I had a pretty flashy, you know, website, you know, when I was in college that, you know, I didn't really do too much with, but it did get me a few jobs. I was a webmaster at a summer camp in Maine. It was a really great experience for a couple summers. I did that. And I just kind of kept up with it. And then, you know, when it came time to finally graduate with my liberal arts degree, I applied for a job at a publishing company. What they do is primarily cookbooks for churches and other organizations. And so they had this really sophisticated FileMaker database that held everything. And then AppleScript, I think, is what really generated a lot of the cookbooks from there. So I was tasked with basically learning PHP, connecting to those FileMaker databases, and building the website that would allow people to design their cookbooks online, invite contributors to type recipes and do all that kind of stuff. And so really since then, it was about 2005, I've just been working on the web, learning and keep building. And so I moved to Omaha in 2007, I worked for about 6 months at an agricultural company doing sort of a customer service role and really doing a lot of weird things with JavaScript. And it really wasn't a good fit for me. That's when I joined up with a friend of mine that actually I grew up with in this small town called Lamar's in Iowa, John Henry Muller. He had a company called What Cheer. And he basically said, you know, I'm looking for a guy that can help, you know, basically do some development. And so I joined up with him in the spring of 2009. And really since then, I was been working with him up until about June when I stepped away from PAC. So We did What Cheer, and that was a design and development consultancy company. We did a lot of work for clients in Omaha, a lot of work for Union Pacific Railroad, which is really fun. About 2.5 years ago, we were approached from a founder of a startup in San Francisco who wanted to build a community called PAC, and that's a website for people who love dogs. And so she convinced us to basically put our consulting business on hold and start doing the freelance or the startup stuff. And that was a really good 2.5 years. And now, I mean, just in the last 2 weeks, I've actually been kicking off my own technology consultancy, freelance web development. So I'm really glad to be back in the working with clients and working on a variety of projects again. But I picked up a lot of lessons from those earlier days as a consultancy, the days as a startup, and I'm trying to apply everything from there to what I'm doing now with my own thing.
No, that's very cool. I want to talk about PAC real cool because the site itself is interesting in the sense that it's a social network for dogs, right? For
sure.
Pets, which is really a good is a really cool idea, right? Pet owners, right? I bet you come across some pretty avid dog owners, right? As working on the site, right? Did you have any interaction with them, and did you get feedback from them as you were building the site?
Yeah, so I think a lot of my role was really a lot of community-driven stuff, and that was really allowed me to step away from sort of just being the guy behind the code and doing more community-driven things. But you know, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that, Jim, because if you pay attention, you look at your Facebook feeds, your Twitter feeds, Instagram feeds. You know, every fifth thing you see is probably somebody's dog. You know, it's just a natural thing for people to want to share. And so that was really cool with PAC is that we really built a really beautiful community for people that could just, it was almost that they could say, all right, I'm not going to bother my friends, you know, on Facebook anymore with my dog photos, and I'm going to go here, and we're just going to go nuts. So, yeah, there it is.
And this is funny because the first question is, do you have a dog, right? And I said no, and they're like, oh, okay, no dog. But you still love dogs, right? I mean, this is great engagement, right, from that standpoint. So, yeah, I'm going to say I love dogs. And then that could have gotten weird. I like that in there. And so choose a photo of the dog you love the most. I'll take the one here that's laying on its back. Choose another favorite. So we're going to come in here. I'm sure I've got some listeners that are dog lovers. So we'll kick through. And then at this point, I would sign in. I would sign up, right? And it's like a Facebook for dogs. I can post those and share them. About how many? Can you share about how many were on that network? I know you're not with them anymore. Is that a number that was public? Or
no, not really. Okay. I mean, we were always growing. But it's amazing. You know, I think the one thing that I can say is that you would expect sort of the very popular breeds of dogs to be the high numbers. And for the most part, they are, right? But what we were really able to do was go into smaller pockets of dog communities and just explode. The Alaskan Klee Kai is an example. Like, this is a dog breed that's super rare, but we had just tons and tons and tons of them, and because people really like to associate and, you know, it's the pack mentality, right? So the community is always growing, and you know, I was floored at the number of people that, you know, that were willing to come on there and share all their posts. But really, I think the biggest takeaway from that is that it didn't matter if you had a very rare kind of dog, that you could really connect with those folks that were they're also into those same sort of rare breeds as well.
Did you so Mike, let me ask this guy. You're a dog owner, Mike. How's that going for you?
Well, it's going well.
I heard you talking about it on your new podcast. So.
I'm worried about Hannah and I being actual parents to children after I've seen how we've raised our first dog. So that was the story in the podcast. But when I was reading the description of Pack Dog, it's like, hey, do you post a lot of pictures of your dog? I'm like, yes, every like fifth photo is of Petey. And same with my wife. And so I was instantly engaged with that website. I didn't sign him up just yet, but I was like, oh, very cool idea. So I was wondering kind of what you were involved in when you were at PAC. And so you said more of the community side?
Yeah, actually, so I was responsible for the email empire. It was really what my sort of area was. And what that meant was that we did a lot of, I still do a lot of email, specifically breed, you know, breed-specific types of email. So basically my job was to, at first was to wrangle, we had about 50 to 60 pack leaders. So we had a Chihuahua pack leader, a French Bulldog pack leader, so on and so forth. Every week what they would do is they would look online for kind of interesting finds of neat and cool products that, you know, were breed specific. So whether that would be, you know, t-shirts or socks or umbrellas or even YouTube videos and things like that, what they would do is they would compile those links and then each week write a newsletter that would go out to all the people that had that breed. And so I looked at that as, first and foremost, really a community challenge, right? I needed to go out and find the right people that had that passion to do that, you know, week after week after week. But at the same time, it became a real technical problem as well, where it's, okay, so now you have more and more and more of these people that are submitting these links, and, you know, how are you actually generating the emails and all those things? So I built a whole sort of back-end system, and that was really fun for me because I'm a web developer, but I was able to really work on something that was seen by about 75 people. And it was I could push out updates and test things out without really having to worry about making a whole community of people really upset. And so it was really fun to work on a small something like that did that. So we did these the newsletters that were breed specific, and then we also started surfacing the best content on Pack as well. So believe it or not, not every photo that somebody shares of their dog is going to be really good. And of course, you want that good content to kind of bubble up to the top. And then, of course, that good content is what gets people re-engaged to the site. And so I built a tool that would basically allow us to bring in all the posts for the week for each breed and sort of pick the top, you know, 5 or 10 for each breed. And then what that would mean is then on a Friday, say I have a mystery mutt, and assuming I had a mystery mutt and a Shiba Inu, I would get an email with the best post for the mystery mutts and then the best post for the Shiba Inu. So there were custom emails, of course, that were spent specifically to the people based on their breed affinity, and that was really fun too. So I mean, it's a good data challenge, it's a good design challenge, a good user experience challenge, and all of that I had a lot of fun with. So really, at Pack, I was the email empire guy, and I really had a lot of fun.
So when you don't have that fear of, making everyone mad by being able to roll out these updates and not have that fear, does that build your confidence as a developer? Because you're kind of, since you don't have that fear, you're able to just do things that you feel are right and then that you learn whether they were or they weren't. Does that help your confidence?
Yeah, it does. And the other cool thing is I could say, like, hey, use Chrome or use updated Firefox. Or, I didn't have to worry about somebody coming in there with IE8. A lot of those challenges that web developers have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, I really didn't have to. So that was really nice, yeah.
Alex, as I look at the site, you could almost take the dogs out and put podcasters in and have the same kind of site, right? By location,
Oh, I like it. Let's do it.
Right? Because as podcasting is getting more and more popular, there's Facebook groups and there's all these disparate groups. There's a group on Google+ and stuff. But, you think about, there are thousands of podcasters, and talk about people who are passionate about their craft. And so instead of pictures of dogs, they're sharing their feed, because every podcaster, all they want to do is really just share their feed, right? Their latest episode, what they're talking about, right? That kind of thing. Interesting, as I think about this, it's like, oh, this would be an interesting, some come at it from an RSS feed standpoint. They try to create these directories where people can go listen to it. I think that's the wrong motivation. People don't go there to listen to it. People go there to brag about the podcast that they have, right? These dog owners, they're not looking at other people's dogs. They want to see their dogs, how they stack up against, right? So I think you guys get the motivation in the right place, which is hey, I can be proud of my dog. And I think podcasters are the same way. So it's interesting. I have to start thinking about this.
I think you're onto something there, Jim.
I think so, too, especially if you think about just the walkthrough questions it asked you right at the beginning there. Like, okay, do you like podcasts? Well, yes or no. Then, okay, do you think you would like podcasts? And then what categories do you like? Who are some of your favorite podcasters? And then it just gives you kind of, if I had a newsletter every week that had, like you just said, here's the best of these categories, and not just the standard 5 podcasts I hear of when I think of tech, or not the same 5 comedy podcasts, but really a deep, in-depth, scraping the barrel for some really cool, unfound podcasts. That could be interesting.
Well, and the curation part, right, for you, you had mods, and you call them pack leaders, right, at that point. And
that's right.
I think that's the genius in this, is that you – and what did you give them to motivate them to do these things for you? Because certainly they're not employees of the company, right? These are just volunteers?
Right, and we had – I had probably 20 folks that did it for 2 years without missing a week. So what we did is we listed them on the about page. They're all listed on the about page on Pack, which elevates them as Pack leaders. And in the newsletters themselves, we would have their photo and a little bio and links to their website. We would just do little things here and there, sending them Starbucks gift cards or Pack T-shirts or you know, just little things here and there, just a handwritten card in the mail, things like that. You know, and then I also built a lot of tools, you know, keeping in communication with them was important. So building tools to send, you know, personalized emails and make sure that you're able to keep up with folks is important as well. But, you know, it was a matter of them, it was sort of elevating people to be, you know, the end-all resource of that particular breed, and I think they really appreciated that. I mean, there was a lot of engagement from readers, and they would get a lot of great questions, and they would answer those. I mean, it was a really neat experience, and a lot of people just got a thrill out of, you know, taking, you know, just maybe 20 to 30 minutes a week really working on that.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. You guys had come up with a tool, though, behind the scenes, because you're all over the place, right? This mm-hmm. is the one thing I found very interesting. I've asked you about this twice, and I wanted to bring you back on to talk about, because I found it, when we think about collaboration, all your developers, different parts of the country, right? You don't have a central office where everybody's at. So you guys kind of came up with a method to stay in contact with each other. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we were always users of Campfire, even when you know, we were down in the office at Wetshear, when it was just the three of us. And Campfire, if you're not familiar, it's sort of the, you know, everybody's using Slack now. I mean, it's a chat room type thing where you're able to really communicate, and you paste in GIFs and they'll load for you automatically and all those things. You know, it's just a good way to stay in contact. You can also do some really other interesting things like deploy code through there or trigger any sort of other things that you would really need to do. But along with Campfire, at one point, a coworker pasted a link to an app called Squiggle, which I think is still available. And what, you know, at first that, you know, at first glance, you think this is the most ridiculous thing ever, because it's basically an app that would take a photo of you, you know, every, you know, 10 seconds or something like that, and put it up on the screen. And, you know, we used it for the free trial, and I don't remember what the pricing was at the time. But, you know, we've got so many sort of crafty folks that just one night, I think my buddy Hobbs, you know, my good friend and coworker, that he pasted a link into Campfire and said, here's a new Squiggle, guys. And it was just something that he put together, you know, I think on Heroku, you know, in a couple hours, you know, and that was that. I mean, and so we kind of took it and we expanded on that. So it's a system that would take a photo of you every 5 seconds, right? And it would put it up on the screen. And, you know, it wouldn't matter. I mean, like, occasionally you'd be caught picking your nose or making a weird face or something like that. But, you know, it would, you know, the next 5 seconds later, another one come on there. And what we found was, you know, with three of us being in Omaha, one being in Ohio, another one being in California, you know, you get so used to working in your home. And, you know, it's nice to recognize when your coworker in California got a haircut or something like that. And so that was really fun. And then we started expanding that a little bit. We have a button called Dance, and what you do is you click that dance button, and then your screen will count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you have something like 4 seconds to just sort of move around, and it'll capture that as a GIF, and then it'll just loop that GIF for 60 seconds. And so I think if you go to dance.packdog.com, I think is the address. Yeah. These are all just a number of GIFs that we had taken of ourselves, you know, and that we uploaded to this, because we caught a lot of really funny things inside in pack faces. So it was just a fun way, you know, it wasn't too much of a distraction. I mean, it was just a really good way to keep in touch with people and see, you know, each other along with the text. And we had a lot of fun with it.
Now, that's awesome. When you tell me that story, because we have a lot of, you know, I work with quite a few remote workers as well, and that's always the big challenge. And as a video podcaster, I just really believe that video changes the equation when it comes to connectivity, right? We're having this conversation. I can see you. You can see me. That's a lot richer than just an audio conversation or over the phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people all the time, if it can't be in person, it has to be in video. And so when you were talking about this, I would encourage folks to stop what you're doing right now. Go out to dance.packdog.com and put that. I'll paste that in the chat room as well, so you guys can go out and take a peek at it. But as goofy as it is, right, it's those goofy moments in the office when you're together that you get, that you miss when you're not there, right? And I think those are some critical, hey, let's laugh together, hey, let's, you know, it's that chit-chat conversation that really builds morale and trust, right, which is super, super important in a team concept. And so,
and creativity and everything. I mean, you know, we had that in our office in Omaha. And when we decided to go as a distributed team, we made a an effort to really say, how can we preserve that? We don't want that to go away. And so that's why we think, we took some company time to build those kinds of tools, but you know what? It really made sense, and I'm glad we did.
Yeah, no, it's super fun. And so the name of the tool again that you use, Squiggle, is that what is the to make these, or what was the platform you used?
Yeah, so actually, to be perfectly honest, Pack Faces was just sort of a ripoff of Squiggle, right? Yeah. I mean, we sort of understood the functionality, and then we thought, well, we can sort of build this on our own and add our own things to it. But I think it's S-Q-U-I-G-G. I want to say is, nope, that's not it.
Because I'm interested in, let's see, S-Q-U-I-G-L?
Maybe.
Squiggle pick? No.
We're all just guessing randomly.
I think it was called
Squiggle. How can we spell it?
Oh, that's terrible.
It's the problem with all the startups now. No one knows how to spell them.
Oh, I know. We have two projects that we're working on at Gallup. One is called Organizer, O-R-G-N-I-Z-E-R. It's supposed to be Organizer, but Organizer was taken, right? Because you can't get that. So our high school students our interns built this homework organizer as one of their senior projects during the internship program. But Organizer wasn't available, so we just took, we left the vowel out, right? And mm-hmm. then we want to create one internally, and we're considering calling it Tracker, but it's going to be T-R-A-C-K-R, because you don't put the E in things anymore.
Not cool anymore.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, we're going to, but you just kind of leave the stuff out. Okay, so Alex, you found that.
There, I did find it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I love the idea and I love the concept. And I, as I even think about online communities, we have we've got a group of guys here that have been, many of them have been listening to our podcast stuff for the last 3, 4, 5 years. And it's awesome to be able to connect with them. I'd love more to connect with them more that way via video and some of those kinds of things. So it'd be interesting to think how do I create a chat room that I could just be open? I have video, and you have to have video to come in, but you could just pop in, right? Have a conversation, pop right back out. So, or whatever, right? Ever along those lines. One of those things that I may too with some of our folks, I've got a bunch of interns in Washington, D.C., that I might say, hey, let's try this out. Like when you're sitting at your desk working, just turn your webcam on, let's try this out and see. These are college kids, and they actually do a great job of, we just go on Skype. If we need each other, we just jump on Skype, and it goes video, and it's just the best way to do it. But I love that story. So thanks for sharing that again with it. And, lessons learned, maybe give me an example, you saw those pictures, but was there any time when you're like, gosh, this is so worth it? And then was there a time when you thought, man, we never should have done this, because you had that, you're like, that creates a problem. Any of those, either ends on the spectrum?
I've got 4 children, and so it's not out of the question for me to be working at home, and especially during the summer, having kids come in. So, I think it became maybe a little bit more apparent, how many times I'm interrupted per day, things like that. But, we're a very family-focused company anyway, so it really wasn't that big of a deal. But I think, working if, now that said, somebody that would be so uptight, you're probably not working from home, you're probably not able to do those fun things anyway. There were a few occasions where I thought, come on, people are going to see that, the kids are just kind of spazzing out in my office here a little bit. What was really great is that we would get together quarterly. We would meet up in different parts of the country. And it's like we could get together without really missing a beat. I think if you go 4 months without seeing somebody, you're going to, there's going to be a lot of time where you're getting reconnected and talking about a lot of things. But, for us, we were just able to meet just we had just seen each other the other day. And so it made those meetings in person a lot more productive as well.
No, very cool. As you look, let's shift gears a little bit. As you look to the future, you got some options, some choices. When you think about where we are with the web today, and over the last couple of weeks, we've had a couple developers on talking about this, so I'd be interested in getting your point of view on it. When we think about where the web is today and what's going on out there and what's being successful and what's not, and as a developer, what you'd like to do, kind of give me your status on the web. How's it doing? Are we making progress? Is it better today than it was? And I don't mean quality better. Certainly we're doing stuff, but are we getting things done out there? Are there stuff folks doing it right? That kind of question. Give me how you feel about the web right now.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. You know, I say it a lot that I'm sort of glad that when I was in high school, we didn't have things like Facebook and we didn't have Twitter and that kind of stuff. And I think it would make things a lot harder, you know, to sort of define who you are as a person and kind of grow up. And so I think we're going to be seeing the effects of that. And we already are now. But I think that's going to have a tremendous effect on, you know, how people are at work and how they are with their families and all of those things. And so there's a little bit of, you know, concern, I think. But I have faith in humanity that, you know, it'll be okay. But I mean, as far as, you know, as everything else, I mean, every election cycle, I mean, look at how much the web has played and how much Twitter is even making such a big deal. I mean, there's political candidates arguing on the internet with Mexican mobsters, right? And, it's a very public thing for that to happen. And it's phenomenal to see that. Or even like Vines, for example, you know, they're 6 or 7 second long, you know, videos that just sort of repeat. But, you know, Vine, you know, just the perfectly timed Vine could really make or break someone's political career. And so we're going to have such phenomenal records of these kinds of important things and instantaneous stuff that, you know, it's even hard to speculate what it's going to be like. But, you know, just thinking about, you know, how we were at the last presidential election cycle and then how we were before and how much growth and how much it's changed since then, I mean, it's only going to become more and more and more. And, you know, for better or for worse, we're going to see how we all shake out as a society from it.
Yeah, no, for sure. What would you, if you were, you know, you got some choices here, and you don't have to be super specific. I know you're out there kind of doing some freelancing stuff, but what's really interesting to you on the web right now, as you look at some of the trends that are going on, what's interesting to you? What would you like to do more of, or what seems really interesting to you?
Yeah, of course, as a product guy and, you know, web developer, you're always thinking about what, you know, what is good, or what would be a good startup to launch, or what would you want to do? And so the answer to that is pretty easy for me. I'm very involved in our school's PTA. I'm very involved in public education. And we're doing a lot of really interesting things, taking a lot of, I mean, to be honest, PTAs can be sort of crusty with technology, slow to adapt. And we've been able to do some really, really neat things by leveraging, you know, just a basic blog, taking that more with email newsletters, taking that even further with SMS reminders and SMS communication and things like that. But one of the biggest things, and as a PTA president, I get inundated all the time from fundraising companies that always want to come out and they want to, you know, you want to do your catalog fundraiser, we want to sell your cookie dough, and we want to do all these different things. But more than anything, you know, it's a money-making scheme for them, right? I mean, if you spend $20 on wrapping paper for somebody's school fundraiser, the school is probably going to get about $8, and that's the way it is. And so I like the idea of building technology that kind of leverages person, you know, like just direct donations to causes that people care about. And so that's, you know, as I sort of balance my consulting and freelance web development, I'm also looking, you know, at ways of building tools to kind of leverage parent groups in a school, because I'm very passionate about public schools, and I think that community members are going to be the ones that really raise up a public school, and that we can't really sit around and wait for government to necessarily do that. And so building those technologies to facilitate even the donations, but I mean more than the communication between parents and teachers and students and all these things, I'm really into that, and I hope to be spending more time doing that in the future.
I like the idea of that in the public school community. When I think of podcasting, I think of the same sort of thing, right? Affiliate links or selling an Amazon Audible trial, things like that, where we have all these links and, you know, the podcaster maybe gets like 4, 10, 15%, something like that. But now the new trend is going to like something like Patreon, where your listeners, if they really find your stuff engaging and informative and they like you, they just give you the money instead of, you know, back channeling it and finding these ways. It's like, you know, if I like you, I don't want to sign up for one of your links. Just give me a way to give you money. And I think if you brought that to the school system, you know, because although I love seeing the cute little kids with their, you know, canisters of cookie dough, and it's fun. But yeah, if I could just give them the money and know that they're getting 100% of what I want to give them, and maybe even tell them where I want it to go. I want this to go towards the sports. I want this to go towards the fine arts, things like that. I think it's a lot more effective. So that would be interesting to work on those sort of platforms for those public schools. I like that idea. It's interesting.
Alex, mobile versus desktop, as you're as a developer out there right now, you know, the trend, of course, is everything's going mobile, but there are still billions of desktops out there, right, when we think about that. As a developer, are you doing mobile first for everything and then backporting that to the browser, or how's that working for you?
Yeah, I do a lot of responsive web development. And really, I mean, my main strengths are on the back end, of course. So I work with really talented designers that are really doing a lot of the design and front end development. But when it comes to something that I want to do, as my own project, I'll use like sort of front end frameworks to help make that happen. And so Twitter Bootstrap is one. You know, it's like basically you get a chunk of CSS and you can sort of determine which sort of components you want to support in there. But it makes sense. For me, and I think for most developers at this point, if you're doing something on the web, you might as well think about it from a responsive standpoint in the beginning, because it's so much easier to start with that than try to go back and make up for that later on. As far as native apps, I don't do any native app development. I'm not an iOS developer. I'm not an Android developer. And while it's something that I think would be fun to get into, I really like the idea of being able to update, code on a website and have changes instantaneously happen instead of going out, and waiting for the App Store to approve your app, have that go through, or maybe not even approve your app, and, you spend all this time developing it, and then it doesn't get out there. So, maybe we'll see someday that I'll pick it up, but you see a lot of, of course, and it's been happening for a long time, or like a lot of mobile or a lot of web tech, being able to easily integrate into mobile apps. And I think those are getting better and better and better. And it's been a while since I've explored those. But I'm really always, pretty solidly web first. But to answer your question, really responsive is the responsible way to do it. So that's the approach that I usually start with.
Yeah, no, it's a good answer from that standpoint. Have you done much WordPress work? As podcasters, we're in WordPress. I know to deploy, like you talk to schools and stuff, that's sometimes the easiest way to get stuff going. Mm-hmm. Have you done much work with WordPress?
Tons. And it's funny that, when you were talking a little bit earlier about the way for people to start pinging you from your website and talking to you directly from there, it reminded me of a long, this would have been 2006, 2007, I forked a WordPress plugin that was somebody from Germany had built that was interfacing with SMS gateways in Germany. And so I forked it, and I kind of made it a little bit, I put a character count down and I had a larger field, but basically I had this thing running on a WordPress site where anybody that could hit it would just type, not very many characters at Word, in SMS at the time, but just send me a little message. And so I would have like my old Nokia phone or my old Razor flip phone, and I would get text messages from just random strangers that would happen to come across my website. I love WordPress. I've been using it for a long time. And in fact, that was really what got me into WhatCheer, was my experience with WordPress. My wife is a recipe blogger, so she's really into that. And we finally, relaunched her website, new branding and everything like that. But it was really fun to spend a lot of time. She's been blogging since 2007, and all sorts of recipes, just phenomenal amounts of recipes and great photos. And to be able to take that from an old, it was a crusty old WordPress theme and put it in something nice and beautiful and see just what a difference it makes to have something that's really designed nicely was a really fun project. And we launched that in, I guess her birthday was June 29th, and so we launched that the following day. I got the design for her birthday year before then, I thought I'll get the design and I'll do all the development. It took a little bit of time, but finally we got it and we launched it. It's called The Kitchenarium, and I'm going to shamelessly send a link in there.
Yeah, put some of that in the chat room for sure. Yeah.
Really proud of that. And that's, you can tell how I get my beautiful figure by being married to a woman that is able to cook so well. But that was my latest big WordPress project. And, so like I'm 2 weeks into doing freelance development, And I've been 2 weeks into doing WordPress development. So I've got some fun projects lined up with clients that are doing neat things with WordPress multi-site and those kinds of things. And I really enjoy just being able to go in there because it's so well documented, you know, and there's so many people that use it. And so, you know, for me being not a computer scientist, I have a liberal arts background, but, you know, I've got enough experience writing code that if you have a problem, somebody else has had that problem, and it's pretty easy to solve it with WordPress. And I you know, I'm a big fan of WordPress.
Well, it's funny you mention that because so my degree, I have a liberal arts degree as well, and I'm an IT manager, right? I do everything IT. It's funny. Mike's background is in business and now law, and yet, Mike, you gravitate towards the tech. What's the deal with that?
Well, my undergrad was business IT, so it was the same sort of thing, the management information systems. Creighton switched the name over to BIA, which is Business Intelligence and Analytics. So that's what gravitated me towards the tech, and just loving the tech. But, yeah, now I'm trying to fit that into law. I don't know how we're going to do that. We're going to see here in a year.
Well, I think it's cool, though, to have this background because when you think about WordPress, Mike, you started on Squarespace, right? Is that
– Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of that ecosystem, and by listening to us for a while, then you're like, oh, and you kind of made the journey or the jump over to WordPress.
Well, they're just very different.
Yeah,
they're very different. They're both good at what they do. So Squarespace, if you want a website in 5 minutes that looks just gorgeous, and it's mainly a place for them to come, they can do basic interactions. You can host a podcast if you want, if you just do very basic things. But it does that very, very well. And you can have – when I do website creation for some small companies, you know, I've done two of these for people – I'll go up on Squarespace and I'll make it, and it works perfectly for what they need. They're not looking for anything fancy. But then as I started to have my needs grow, you know, I want just the thing that you were talking about earlier, Jim, on your website where people can talk to you. Or if you want to, you know, use PowerPress to host multiple podcasts. There's just a lot of things that WordPress can do a lot better. WordPress is more advanced while also still being relatively easy to use, easy to install, and easy to maintain. But yeah, they're both just very different. But once you start to get beyond the very basic level, Squarespace doesn't work out too well for you.
Alex, have you experimented at all on Squarespace? That's the other one out there. Have you done much with that?
The only experience that I had was, you know, right before they had, what are they on, Squarespace?
I think six.
Six? Okay, so I helped a buddy who was a chiropractor get a website up. And then probably a month later, his cousin, who was also a chiropractor, wanted basically the same website, and I went into Squarespace and it was totally different. And they said, well, you know, we could put you on the old version if you want to, you know, but we don't really recommend it. But yeah, I mean, like, they've made a lot of improvements on there. Yeah. The draggy droppy stuff gives me a little bit of, it throws back to like old Front Page days or like Dreamweaver days, you know, things like that. But you're exactly right. I mean, if you want something that's beautiful really fast, it's definitely the way to go.
Yeah, for sure. And then on the WordPress side, of course, you were talking about responsive design, and many, many of the themes now that are out there are responsive. That's the cool thing is, right, you have this whole ecosystem of theme designers who are out there kind of competing to have their theme. I mean, it's a nice ecosystem, kind of competing to have their theme on top, and you can pick off, you know, find a great theme, pick it off. The one thing I don't like is that the themes update themselves a lot. And so, right, you're in the same boat. And, of course, I'm OCD on updates, right? So it's like when that little dot is on there and it's like, all right, you got to update your theme. Oh, I'm going to let it sit because I know it's going to create some work for me when I go to update that theme, right? And so, you know, you kind of run into that problem. And I've let many of my themes just sit for and never updated them because I don't want to run the risk of a theme update breaking things and then I got to go back. We get on Ask the Podcast Coach on Saturday mornings, we get this question every once in a while, like, why can't web design just be easy? And I always tell them, you know, easy means simple, like, and less complicated means lots of restrictions. And it always seems like, well, people are like, well, I just want to set up. Well, you always get down the road and they're like, well, I want, I'm sure with customers you deal with this all the time. Can I get, and they always ask for that one thing, right, that you can't give them. And you're like, right, you know, and so anyways, with WordPress, certainly an interesting, I think, super easy to spin up. You know, Azure is supporting WordPress now. Microsoft Azure, the cloud service, is supporting that almost native. And so if you have an Azure account, you can go and spin up a website and literally, I think, in three clicks now have a WordPress site running. They give you 10 of those. They're basic for free. and you can get a WordPress site running. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking about doing a blog, you can go to Azure, set up an account. It will take a credit card. They're not going to charge you until you buy something from there. But you can. They give you 10 free websites. Of those free websites, WordPress is one of them. You can spin up a WordPress site and give it a try. I always encourage people, go out there and give it a shot. It'll be your domain dot, whatever you pick, dot azurewebsites.net. So you're not going to get, you don't even have to buy a domain to get the thing done. It's a great way to do it. Alex, I don't want to run out of time. I want to talk about some of your gadgets. Mike and I are living in the world of an Amazon Echo at the moment. And when we think about a device that could not be more anti-web in some ways, right? It kind of is, but it kind of isn't, right? It's, you talk to it. Are you, any gadgets that you're currently working with, excited about? Are you a watch guy? Have you gotten into, you know, mobile wallet, that kind of stuff? What's kind of your favorite gadgets?
Yeah, that's a great question. So around Christmas time, I got a Pebble. And this is, you know, the Pebble that's been around for, you know, 2 years before I got it. You know, so I got it for like $75, you know. But I mean, as far as like an approachable consumer gadget, it's my favorite by far. I love, you know, the notifications that come on my wrist. You know, if I'm in a meeting with somebody, you know, you don't have to pull out your phone. You can just take a quick glance at your watch to know if it's important, if it's not important. You know, if your phone rings, it's not a Dick Tracy style. You can't talk through it. This is the older one. But you can accept a call or deny a call if you need to. I'm a really big fan of the Pebble. And the best thing about it is that I charge it once a week. And you know, that's phenomenal. I mean, I've had the Apple Watch try on, and I've tried it on, and it feels really great. The way it taps your wrist is really wonderful. A lot of the things that it does is really phenomenal. But the thing that bothers me so much about it is that you're charging that every day. And I'm already charging my phone every day. I don't want another gadget that needs another charge every single day. So for the time being, I'm really sticking with this Pebble, and I really love it. It uses the e-ink, you know, it's like the old Kindles, you know, and everything like that, and it works really well. It really, so if you're looking for, a toe dip into a smartwatch, and you don't want to shell out the $300 or $400 or $500 or more for an Apple Watch or even an Android Wear, you know, definitely check out the Pebble, because you can still get these black and white ones for about $80 or $90, and they're great. I love them.
No, very cool. Yeah, you're the second or third I've had on in the last three or four months who've gone to the Pebble. That's always surprised me, and then a lot of people pick those up. I think if I bought one today, what are they retailing at? Kind of right now, $79, $99. What were they?
I think so, but they have a new Pebble Time, which has a color display. It's not full color, and then it has a little bit more features, and I think a little bit better build quality and all of that. But I think you can still buy the original Pebble for like $80 or $90. Mm, yeah, highly recommend it.
Pretty hackable too. Quite a few things. One of my high schoolers had one, and he'd hack on that thing.
They have there's a really neat. They've got some stuff that basically compiles JavaScript down into. It's just running C, I think, is what it's running. You know, I mean, it's got to be very, you know, low level for a watch like that. Right. And so, but they built this really neat, and you can even do all the development through a browser. You don't need to worry about like installing weird things on your computer or getting a development environment set up. They have these sort of ways you can log in and write code, and then it'll just push it right over to your watch. It's really neat. So, I mean, if you have some JavaScript experience, or even if you don't, I mean, JavaScript is pretty approachable, and you can find some really fun tutorials. So you can build watch faces or little apps. We built my buddy Hobbs, who's my, like, he's my go-to real, you know, like Mountain Dew drinking developer, really smart guy, you know. We sort of collaborated on this app that we call Bro, and what Bro is, and it's available in the iOS App Store. It's a play on the app that was Yo. I don't know if you remember the app Yo, where you would just tap a name and it would send Yo over to a friend. The stupidest thing ever. So we made Bro, but what you do with Bro is you basically click on a contact, and then you drag to set the number of O's you want in a Bro, because you can have many conversations with just somebody, Bro, like, Bro? Bro.
Wait, you made Bro?
Yeah.
That, like, took off at Creighton, like, with all, like, it was, like, yeah, I, like, a ton of my friends actually were using it. I swear that was the one, yeah. I never got it, but they were all telling me about it. I'm like, wait, what is this? Is it like Yo? And they're like, well, yeah, kind of. And that's so funny that that's you behind that.
that's so funny. Well, what's funny is Silicon Valley did an episode, you know, if you've seen that show on HBO, or it's sort of a parody of that.
I love that show. It's my all-time favorite show.
Oh, it's hilarious. But, you wouldn't believe what happened to our App Store ratings and downloads and things like that after there was that episode where they were talking about that app called Bro, because we were already in the App Store at that point. But ours is even better, I think, because you can set the number of O's, and you can have punctuation, you can have question mark or exclamation point, things like that. Actually, Hobbs just sent me a download to download the beta. He's got a 1.0 that's looking real good. That'll be in the App Store probably in the next week or so, I hope. But anyway, yeah, to bring that back to the Pebble, we made this app on the Pebble that used the accelerometer. So, like, you could fist bump, you know, and then that would add more O's to the Bro, and then you could send it that way. Like, and that was just, you know, a couple hours of mess around in a coffee shop with my buddy Paul, like, interfacing with Bro. Totally useless, but, you know, kind of fun stuff.
Okay, but I'm so glad that was the intention, because that's how they were using it, was like the Bro, like, and they would say it just like that. So I'm very glad that there wasn't like an ulterior motive for creating it, but, you know, that's exactly how they used it. That's funny.
Oh, I'm so glad that you have seen it before. I mean, we didn't really pay a lot of attention, and then it hit Silicon Valley, and I don't know. There's a ton of. I mean, I don't know.
I think that's where it came from. Because a lot of my friends watched that, so that might have been when the spark hit. Because it wasn't too long ago that this happened. So,
I'll paste a link in the. So this is the old design and everything. There's 55 ratings in the App Store, and it's like 4.5 out of 5 stars. And if you read the ratings, they're just silly. I mean, because it's just a goofy app. Definitely recommend you check it out if you've got an iOS device. Bro me, I'm Alex B. Gates. We can bro back and forth.
I love it.
That's classic. I'm gonna have to dig into it, right? We for the longest time we've done bruh. You know, instead of bro, we've done bruh. What's up, bruh?
Sure.
And so we even joked. We had the guys from, or I had the gal from Social Bro. I don't know if you're familiar with that company. They're a Twitter analytics company, and the Bro stands for browser, so it's social browser is what they were originally going for, but they shortened it to Social Bro. And I told them, well, here in the Midwest, it would need to be Social Bra. And she didn't think that was very funny. But, no, that's awesome. Let me ask you real quick before we let you go, home automation. Have you gotten much? Have you bitten the home automation bug? Are you using lights? Or are you, you know, any of that stuff?
I've got Hue lights, and I've got, I mean, I've got the command line, you know, so I've got 10 Hue lights in my house, and I love them. And in fact, right outside my office, I've got one in the hallway, and so I just basically pop down my terminal, and if I type on call in my terminal, it sends a command over to that light to turn it blue so that my kids, if they're out there, or my wife, if I'm on a call, they see that it's blue, they won't come in and check out what's going on. Yeah, but I love them. I hook them up with If This and That, you know, and that's kind of fun. I've got Raspberry Pi that controls the lights in my kitchen. So you can tweet at my kitchen and change the color of the lights in my kitchen if you want my wife to wonder what's going on up there, you know? I mean, there's just so many fun things that you can do because they've got a really wonderful REST API, and you can just throw commands at it and do really neat things. And so it's up to you what you want to build to interface with those. So I'm really a big fan of the Philips Hue bulbs, big fan. I haven't gotten the Nest yet. I've always kind of thinking, like, at this point I'm waiting for whatever the next generation would be, but, I don't know if they're really, it's a thermostat, right? I'm not expecting some great big change, you know? So I don't know. I just haven't ever pulled the trigger on the Nest. The drop cam stuff, you know, which was acquired by Nest, is really interesting to me. And I almost bought a drop cam before we went on vacation. And instead, I just found like a little shareware app that I ran on an old MacBook, you know, and I put it up in the living room so I could remote in or, anytime there was any movement or whatever, which ended up mainly being like the clouds going through and changing the amount of like ambient light in the room. I'd get these text messages from my computer telling me there's something going on, but it was really just
pictures of an empty house.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really into that, but I mean the biggest thing are these Philips Hue bulbs. And if you look on my website, I blog at alexbgates.com. I've got a lot of different, different things that I've done with those cue balls. And in fact, that's what when I was at Infotech when we chatted last time, I had just wrapped up that talk that I talked about fun and practical applications of smart lighting, because it can be more than just like turning your living room into a discotheque or weird things like that. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to using smart lighting, and I'm really into that.
So the Amazon Echo would be perfect for you then, just the whole voice automation, being able to, because that's when I got the Hue lights, was when I got my Echo, and I can just tell her, hey, I can be sitting on the couch and, hey, turn this on, turn that on, without actually getting out my phone. Jim, you've had them for what now, 2 weeks?
Yeah, I just got two Hue Lux, so I'm all white.
That's what I have too. Yeah, because
I bought that $80 hub with the two lights. It comes with it, and man, that thing installs so easy. I could not believe. I mean, I opened up the box and there's no instructions. I mean, well, there's three lines. It's like turn the light on and install it, right? And then it's like go plug the hub in, go to the app. Those literally are the three instructions they give you, right? That's it. And I came down, I did exactly what they said, and I had them up and running in maybe 10 minutes. And then I'm like, Sarah, you got to come up here. And so we were telling Alexa, turn all the lights on. So I set some groups. I only have two. So a group of all lights, and then hall light, living room light, right? So I have three different options. And I was like, turn all the lights on. And she'd turn them on. Turn them all off. She'd turn them off. You turn on the living room light. And I know there's more stuff I can do with it. I mean, I can make those do the dancing light things moving around. They're not color, right? But they'll do that too.
So let me ask you, I saw that, of course, I've been following the Echo, and I thought, that looks really great. I got the invitation email to pre-order it as a Prime member. Are you using it every day? Is it something that you find is useful on a day-to-day? And that was, because that was my concern. I thought, well, maybe it'd be kind of neat for a little bit, but I didn't, I wouldn't.
Mike, what do you think you guys use it most for? And then I'll say what we use it most for.
Oh, man, we use it. For all of our lights, and we don't touch a light switch anymore, except for our kitchen is the fluorescent bulbs up top. We live in an apartment that has that old style, so I can't use it for that yet. That's the only switch we touch. Other than that, we are all voice commands to turn all of our lights on and off. Even when we go to bed, we'll leave all the lights on, and when we get in bed, we use the remote and turn them all off. So we use them for all of that. We use it for music all the time. It's a fantastic speaker. Now, we're kind of different. We live in an apartment, which is small. So Alexa can hear us no matter where we are in our entire apartment. So it's a lot easier for just to have one Echo. But for music, we listen to our audiobooks, because obviously it's an Amazon product and we use Audible. So I just say, hey, resume our book, and we can just pick up right where we left off. Sports scores, we probably use it. I'd say we probably give it 20 to 30 commands a day, I'd say.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really versatile.
For me, NPR News. So in the mornings, I come and say, Alexa, give me my flash briefing, and she'll give me an 8-minute NPR, whatever it is, 8 or 9-minute NPR report. I do it every single day when I'm making breakfast. I just listen to the flash briefing. My wife just wears the timer out. So she makes tea, and she wants the tea to steep for exactly 2 minutes. And so she's got this whole setup, and as soon as the water boils, she pours it in the tea thing and says, Alexa, set a timer for 2 minutes. And so those commands are every day. Of course, it's turning our lights on and off. She uses it a lot for music. So, Alex, I think I would say, right, it just keeps getting better. I have a Know It Guide. So if you go to Know It Guy, Know It Guy, G-U-I, knowitguy.com, I have an Amazon Echo Know It Guide out there. And I keep track of every Friday they send, not every, but most Fridays they send a, here's all the new things that your Echo can do. And so I've been capturing those and putting it in the Know It Guide so that I kind of have a running list of all the things the Echo. And almost every week we get some kind of updates through If This Then That, or some kind of integration, or they're adding things to it, or they're upgrading the app. I think you'd like it. I think you'd get into it.
I'm hovering over the Add to Car button right now.
It's totally...
affiliate link somewhere, maybe I should follow that.
If you go to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon, the podcast benefits from it. But it's one of those things, I got in on the original $99, $179 now without the remote. Mike, you're the first person I've heard that really takes advantage of the remote. Most people in the social channels, the remote's not worth it, I'm not using it. But your use case of, like, take the remote with you to bed and then use the voice commands to turn off all the lights in the house from the bedroom, that's genius.
It's the only use case I can think of, honestly, for the remote, besides when we've had a lot of people over and there's a lot of people talking, being able to play, pause, and next. I do use it then as well. But having it in the room and, like you said, turning off the lights is the only time you don't need to hear a response from her, or you don't need to actually hear what she's doing. So it is a perfect use case for that remote. That and, like I said, when there's a lot of people over.
We keep shopping lists on it. So,
my wife loves that.
Yeah, run out of milk. Alexa, add milk to the shopping list, and it's boom, it's there. Alexa, add, you know, whatever we run out of, we just do it, and it goes right to the app. And then when you're in the store, you just bring up the app and go to the shopping list.
Just syncs right. So when you add those lists, it goes right to an app that you pull up.
There's an Echo app. Yeah, there's an Echo app. And we have a single login. We use a single sign-on login for our Amazon stuff. And so whether it's on my wife's phone or my phone, we all have the same shopping list. Or there's a to-do list, too, that you could, in theory, she could tell me, you know, she could fill up the to-do list for things for me to do. And then on the weekends, I could just look at that. We don't. But it's super handy for those kinds of things where in the moment you got your hands full or you're just thinking about it. And it's been that super convenient, Alexa, add to the shopping list, add whatever to the shopping list. And that is genius. I mean, that is really getting – and she just continues to get better. So something to look at. If you're a Hue fan, right, it supports the Hue lights. So find out a way to make it a work expense so you can
there we go. Yeah.
You know, so you can write it off. But very cool. Alex, thank you for coming on. I enjoyed interviewing you the two times that we had a chance to do that at InfoTech and Heartland Developer Conference. Are you coming to Heartland Developer Conference? You speaking? Did you get in?
I'm not speaking, but I'm planning on attending. A buddy of mine is talking, giving a talk on Redis databases. So if you're into, you know, the best high performance database, you should definitely go and check it out. But yeah, I'm planning on being there. I mean, it's a really great. I love the conference. I mean, the people there. I mean, it's just a good mix of folks with you know, all sorts of different skill levels, and you can always have a good conversation with whoever you manage to sit down next to it, you know, in a session. So I really enjoyed my time there. So I think are you going to be there? Will I see you?
Yeah, we're doing podcasts again, so we'll be out.
Fantastic.
Doing that. It's scheduled right up against our meetup. We have a meetup every year we do in Indianapolis. About 35 guys come out from all around the country, and we talk tech for the weekend. Well, somehow I scheduled that the weekend of Heartland Developer Conference. I think I'm going to have to podcast Friday morning, catch a flight Friday afternoon to get to Indianapolis on time, and then I have to be in D.C. on Monday. So I think I'm going to go from Indianapolis to D.C., and then I'll be there for a couple days and make my way back to Omaha. So I've been telling people, I think fate has been trying to get me to cancel this meetup trip to Indianapolis, but I think we'll get out there and definitely be at Heartland Developer Conference. So come by the booth. And, you know, let's chat a little bit while you're there. It'll be good to see you. And thanks again for coming on and for being a part of the Home Gadget Geeks community.
Yeah, I had a blast. Thanks so much.
You bet. And, hey, I see on your blog, are you a Zapier guy as well? Are you using Zapier?
Yeah, I used it more in business settings, you know, some of the things I was doing before with PAC. But, yeah, it's definitely it's a wonderful company. Yeah. A good friend of mine works there, and I love it. So, yeah, check out Zapier.
Yeah, we interviewed them maybe a year ago or so. They were here on the podcast. Wow. The guys are from Missouri and have made their way. I think they're out in California now, right? They've taken it to Silicon Valley. And and so we had – I'm trying to remember – it was their CEO. I'm trying to remember his name at this point. It's escaping
Wade?
Wade. Yep, it is Wade. Mm-hmm. Yep. No, it's Wade. We had Wade on. So if you're interested in watching that, or anybody, we did the interview with Zapier, Z-A-P-I-E-R. Just go to theaverageguy.tv in the search box, type in Zapier, and you'll get that episode. Alex, thanks again. I'll let you drop. Mike and I have some business to do with the community, but thanks for coming on. See, I told you it'd get dark by the end of the
podcast. Yeah, I've got this 5K iMac that's just glowing at me. It was great to meet you, Mike. Thanks.
Yeah, great to meet you.
Yeah, you bet.
Alex, thanks for coming on.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Mike, I was going to talk a little bit about the Echo, but we kind of covered that. And it's kind of cool that that came up. Those lights came in a week ago. We had the first wife issue with it where she's like, I think you're going to need to reset it because I can't. It's dim, and I don't know how to turn it all the way up.
Oh.
And so we walked through it. We got it done.
You can tell Amazon Echo to dim to 100%.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, we got through that part. But she was like, I don't. And so I'm like, okay, just go talk to it. It'll do it. Just have them turn them all the way up. Turn them on, turn them off, whatever. Get them turned off, and then just tell them to turn it on. And there's, I think, six on the Hues. There's six settings, six levels between bright and dark. I think that's the right number. I could be wrong. Do you know?
Is it? Okay, because I was wondering, because when I use the app, the slider seems like it actually, I mean, is very incremental. Now, through the Echo, there's no difference for me between 10 and 20%. There's no difference between 20 and 30. Yeah. I go by 10s. I don't know if there's a difference. Usually I go between full and like 10% if I just want them barely on enough to like read or walk around the house or something like that.
Yeah, I would say to her, dim the lights. Dim the lights. And I think I counted six steps. Now, maybe there's some increments in between. This is one of those things
where you can just tell her to dim. You don't even say anything afterwards. See, I tell her, like, dim the lights to 10%. I do it. Okay.
Yeah. No, just dim the living room lights. She'll bring it down. A drop. And that's whatever that drop is, you know, who knows? This is one of those things where, like, we would want to, like, what's the exact percentage?
Right.
The average consumer doesn't care. It's just dim. Have you gone onto the website, though, on the Hue website, and they have different settings that they have different mood settings that will turn? So you can, on the website, you can say, I want a dinner setting, and it will change the lights to, like, ambient mood, like dinner mood. I'm reading a book mood, or there's a
section. App had a few of those that I was playing around with. But I think it would be a lot cooler if you had the ones that actually had the different lighting. I want to see what those kind of do.
Yeah.
So I might grab one of those, maybe two, because I like his idea of like, hey, we're recording. I could put that right outside the office here so that, you know, when Hannah comes home, she would know if I'm actually doing a show or something like that. That was a good idea.
Alexa, turn on the recording light.
Right? Yeah, there you go.
It could turn that one on, and then it's like, okay, we're in for recording. Hey, how about this idea of using this dog pack site concept for podcasters?
When you were talking about that,
We got to do something with that, I think. You got to give all these sites, because all people want to do is promote their stuff, right? They just want to promote their podcast. They don't care. They don't really want to talk about it. It's just a place to promote it. Well, if you got that motivation going right, you could really, I think, generate some traffic. Imagine a site where you put a little bit of advertising, but you let podcasters just carte blanche promote their site. Could you imagine, you know, the motivation?
And all the other podcasters, we don't care about that, and we actually like it. I like seeing other podcasters. I was going to talk a little bit about, whenever we have time, but I have an app that I just recently started downloading for really growing your Twitter base naturally, and I talked about it on Open Mic Night, so you probably heard me talk about it, but it's really my feed first, my Suit and Scrubs Twitter account now. I want it on my Uyghur Tech because the way I've grown it with this app, it's all podcasters, podcast listeners who are talking about what they're listening to.
Go ahead. Let's talk about it. What's the name of it? Let's do it quick.
So the app's called Crowdfire. It used to be another name. Recently they've switched, so it's called Crowdfire. I do it via the app. I think the app experience is way better than the online experience. You can do it through the web browser, but doing it through the app is better. So a lot of people are either really against this or really for it. Now, obviously, everyone's against buying subscribers, right? You know, we've offered 20,000 subscribers or 20,000 followers for $5. So I don't like those because those aren't real people. But what Crowdfire does, kind of the strategy I've employed with Suit and Scrubs, and I don't know if this is going to, you know, let the cat out of the bag, but you can do copy follow. So, and what that is, it's like, let's say I think people who listen to Jim, those are the people I want that I think they would be interested in my show. So I type in Jay Collison up top. It brings up all the people that follow you, and I can go in and follow them. Now, obviously, when you get that alert, sometimes people will follow you back. Mm-hmm. So the copy follow is huge because you can go in and say, okay, people who listen to – I basically did all the podcasts I like and I listen to. I went in and I started following their listeners because I think those are the people that might be interested in my show. And the reverse effect happened to me, though. Because I have those people in my news feed, it is a perfect Twitter stream for me because it's the people I like listening to and their listeners. So I get the community engagement between all those people. I've gotten – I mean, it's literally been amazing. I thought it was going to be more helpful on getting me more followers. But honestly, I like that feed almost better than my personal account feed, which was not a side effect I had imagined. But a really cool way to grow your Twitter base. I went from about 50, you know, Suit and Scrubs just launched last week. So we went from 50 followers right away, and those are mainly family, friends, people on Facebook that liked the show. And now we're up to today 321. So, I mean, a decent amount of growth in a week when you're getting 300 new followers, and I just
Bitcoin
do that.
Bitcoin kind of growth, man. That's Bitcoin kind of growth.
Yeah, and then it has the unfollow feature too, which is the main one. You know, unfollow people who don't follow me. So you can, you know, if you followed a bunch of followers that they didn't really like your stuff, and okay, I was just kind of trying to get a new community base, you can go back in and unfollow all them. So there's a lot of really cool features and stuff I haven't even explored in the app. I was talking with Colin because I was debating back and forth. I said, is this sleazy? Is this a really bad way to get followers? And me and Colin on my show were going back and forth, and he's a marketing guy. He's a media guy. He goes, you know, not really. He goes, that's the natural way people do this on Twitter. This app just lets you do it faster. He goes, yep. I mean, when you market, who would you market to? You would go out and you would want people that listen to podcasts and people that listen to comedy podcasts. That's who you are. So he goes, it's a natural way. You're not buying them. You're not making them follow you. You're just putting yourself in front of them. And then they say, oh yeah, I might check that out. And it's one more way that people can see you. So
yeah, it helps kind of curate who you want to follow. Now you got to be careful still who you're picking, because there's a lot of spam accounts.
There are, yeah.
Out there are strengths.
And that's why I found that, so I click through really fast. If you do $5 a year, you can follow up to 1,000 people a day. So I'm every 2 days, I'm going in and picking a few of the main Twitter people I think have good followers. I follow up to 1,000, and then, you know, maybe I'll get 50 to 75, and then I'll go in and I'll unfollow all the people who didn't follow me back. And then I keep my main set of people I want to go to. I don't unfollow everyone, but you get rid of the crush that way. You know, all the spam bots and stuff like that. So it deals with it all. It's a kind of an interesting app.
I go back and forth on Twitter. There's times like I want to exploit it, and then I just crossed over the magic 2,000 threshold on Twitter. You know, where you get now, I can do more things like follow more people. After 2000, and I really haven't. It's been 6 months, maybe a year, since I've really done anything like that, where I go follow a bunch of people. Because for a while, I use Social Bro for this, right? I go follow a bunch of people. I give it a couple days. I would unfollow those that didn't follow me. And you go back. You kind of go back and forth on that thing, and you know, you can grow it that way. If you want to work it, I don't know, Mike. My community is best when it's just the ones that really want to talk to me, anyways. I'm not saying you shouldn't do this, by the way.
Right. Well, and it's different. I don't do this for open mic night because it's a different kind of community. But for a show like Suit and Scrubs, a comedy relationship podcast, that's more for the masses. It's not very niche. It works out a little bit well. And actually, I've gotten already two personal emails, like lengthy emails written from people said, hey, you followed me on Twitter. I gave your show a listen. I'm really liking it. And they go into detail about how, like, what they liked in the stories, and that's been in the past 3 days. So it's kind of weird. That would not work, though, on open mic night. It just wouldn't. That's not the type of show it is. So I agree with you. Yeah, very different audience.
Different kind of audience. Hey, real quick, you have a new network. Where would people find you now in the new network?
Oh, yeah, everything forward. So if you're going to old links, that's fine. But 2980network.com. And speaking of Christian and working with him over at Maple Grove, he made it super easy to consolidate. We took our two websites, made it into one network. So Open Mic Night and Suit and Scrubbed, which is my new podcast, are both over at 2980network.com.
Yeah, very cool. And if you haven't heard that yet, you've got one out, right, so far? You got the first
one
out.
Yeah, one out. The next one coming out Monday. City. Yeah.
It's a little drive down to Kansas City with the Zoom.
Podcasting in the car is a perfect time to podcast. We really like it. We're already together. We're already having conversations. So put a mic in front of us, and it worked out well. So
not a bad way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, as we bring this in for a landing, a couple reminders. I'll remind everybody that I put a new TAWK.TO is a service. I was trying out. I thought maybe it would replace Chatwing. Well, no, but now there's a cool little tab, and whenever I'm sitting at my desk, I turn it on, and that means I'm live and available. And if you're out at theaverageguy.tv and you want to chat with me one-on-one, that's a little service, bottom right-hand corner, works on mobile, works on just about anything. Click on that. Right now it says, need help? Speak to it. Oh, no, I'm at another site. I'm at Coinbase, and it says, remind me that. It doesn't say need help. It says, ask a question, Jim's here, something like that. And you click on that, and you can start a conversation with me. We used it the other night. A couple of you helped me test it. It was very, very cool. To give that a spin. So check that out on the site. Speaking of Coinbase, you know, we had the guy, we had Edward from Alpha Bitcoin on last week, and we started the show with Bitcoin being in the 270s, and it climbed up into the mid 290s by the weekend, and Edward's like, ooh, that's the Home Gadget Geeks effect. So I'm sure it wasn't us. I'm pretty positive it wasn't us, but it was just funny how it started climbing. As soon as the show was over, it started climbing. Bitcoin did.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you go look at the pattern.
Hey, take credit for it. You know what? You talked about it. If you can show the correlation on a graph, as long as you can prove it, I'd take the credit.
Yeah. If you're a regular listener to Home Gadget Geeks and you're like, hey, wait a minute. This show was recorded a week ago. I'm one ahead at the moment. I'm actually releasing a show this weekend. This one will be released next weekend. I had a special show we recorded in the post show last week. I actually made that a podcast. It turned out pretty good. I talk a little bit about my podcast workflow and what I do and how we do it. So if you're a regular listener, if you're listening live this week, that comes out this weekend. If you're a regular in the feed, you've already heard it, and that's why we did that. So I'll be one ahead. I'll be taking some vacation coming up here in the next couple weeks, and that'll allow me to kind of go on vacation and for you guys still to get a podcast as we go. We're live every Saturday morning with Ask the Podcast Coach, 9:30 a.m. Central, 10:30 Eastern, if you want to come out and listen to me live. Don't forget about the Home Service Show meetup. I'm still planning to go there. Come hell or high water, I will find a way to get to Indianapolis on September 12th. The link to that will be out in the show notes as well. Don't forget, if you're shopping at Amazon, theaverageguy.tv/Amazon will get you there. If you haven't signed up for the newsletter, go out to the site and get that done as well. If you've made it to this part of the podcast, congratulations and thank you. You are the 1% of the most engaged people who always make it to the end of the podcast. I should put a secret word in here, and if you say the word, if you tweet the word to me, now the live guys would all get it because they're all out there listening live. So that'll never work. But thank you for getting to the end of this podcast. We are live out here every Thursday night, just about 8 Eastern. No, listen to me. 8 Central, 9 Eastern at theaverageguy.tv/live. Too much of this, Mike.
That's not a bad problem to have.
It's by the end of the podcast, I'm struggling. 8 Central, 9 Eastern, now at theaverageguy.tv live. And with that, we'll say goodnight, everybody.